Welcome to Nonprofit Showcase, and this is your host, Fred Black, and we're at 97.9 WCHL. And today on our showcase, we are so thrilled to have with us Maria Eikenberry, who is the executive director of Ears, Eyes, Nose, and Paws, and we're going to find out what all those things mean. Welcome, Maria.
Thank you for having me.
Well, tell us, what does your organization do?
Well, Eyes, Ears, Nose, and Paws partners people with dogs to improve lives. We work with the correctional system to train assistance dogs that we place with people who have disabilities.
And so basically, you are in the business of helping people with disabilities through the use of the dog. So the dog gets trained for various kinds of disabled people?
That's right. So, yes, the end result of the program is that we are making life-changing placements with clients who have disabilities. Along the way, we're also working with inmates and working to change their lives in the process of training the dog. So that partnering happens in the training as well as in the end result of the placement.
So two great things are occurring simultaneously.
Absolutely.
Okay. Now, how long does it take to train a dog to help somebody?
So we place the dogs with clients when they are mature, which in the case of large breed dogs is somewhere around 18 to 24 months old. The dogs perhaps could be trained faster, but we can't place them any faster. So we take that entire time up until they are ready to be placed to train them. And it starts with socialization of the puppies, obviously real basic stuff like housebreaking, and making sure that dogs are comfortable with a wide variety of people and in a wide variety of situations. Starts there and then progresses through.
And I've seen this thing as they featured it on the Today Show. With the service dog they were training, and it started out with the puppy.
Yes. I don't know if that was Canine Companions for Independence. Oh, that may have been with Warrior Canine Connection.
And the trainer would bring the dog back on the show every now and then and show what the dog could do.
Absolutely. And so that's a process similar to what we do. So we start with very young puppies when they're 8 weeks old or so. Mm-hmm. And those dogs are getting out in the community as much as possible to meet people and to
be familiar.
Right, to become familiar.
Skittish,
because in the end, when they are placed with clients, an assistance dog has the training to go into public, and the client has the law helping them have access to a variety of public situations. So clients can take their dogs to restaurants.
And they have a vest on that says service dog.
Yep. And so we need to make sure that our dogs are prepared for those situations.
Are there certain breeds that are better than others for this kind of work?
There are certain temperament types that are better than others, and so there are some breeds where you may encounter that a little more than in other breeds. Most of our dogs are Labrador Retrievers or Golden Retrievers. Mm-hmm. That is as much because those are the dogs that we can get really solid and appropriate dogs because of the stock that's available to us, as much as anything. We've also we have a small terrier that's one of our superstar placements. And so for someone who doesn't need the size of a large breed dog, then a small breed dog can work fabulous.
Now, where do you do all of this training?
We have an office in Carrboro, and so we're based out of that space, and we do a lot of the training out of that. But all of our dogs, we don't have any kennel facilities, so the dogs don't live with us. As puppies, we put each dog with a community home. So we have a community volunteer that we call a young puppy trainer.
And they're the trainers.
They're the trainers, and the dogs are living with those folks until the dogs are 5 to 6 months old. And when they're 5 to 6 months old, they go and live in prison.
Now, that must be hard to be with that puppy for that period and then have to give the puppy up.
I won't say that it's easy, but I kind of liken it to having children. You know, nobody has a child thinking it's going to live with them forever.
Well, I don't know about that.
Okay. Perhaps most people don't.
No, we were counting down.
And then, when you send a child off to college or to get married, it's bittersweet. Mm-hmm. There's certainly a sadness there, but there's
two
pride.
Two sides of the coin, right?
Right.
They're
there's
not
pride. So the same
every
is true
night
with
anymore,
the dogs.
This is just amazing to me. How did you start this? Because I read on your bio that you were a physics major in college, and then you were a businesswoman. How did you get into the dog training business?
So I'm the executive director. I refer to myself as a paper pusher. I try to make things move along so that the trainers don't have to worry about the administrative side of things.
You make it easy for them to do their job.
Right?
Okay.
And that's actually how I got involved. So our program director, Deb Cunningham, and I co-founded the organization. And I actually had really pushed her to start it because I felt like she had a really special skill with visioning and then creating these partnerships between people and dogs and really helping people learn to listen to the dogs and dogs listen to the people and create something amazing out of that. And then very quickly it became apparent that she wasn't going to get any training done if she had to do all of the administrative work as well. So I had to put my money where my mouth was.
So you came in to do
I
the business
in to
part
help,
of it.
Right.
And here we are.
Here we
and
are.
And when were you founded?
We were founded in 2008.
And so you became a 501c3, of course, and we'll talk a little bit later about how people can help you as a nonprofit organization, because in this community, we can all do something, I think, to help.
Yeah, and there are a lot of different ways
nonprofits
to get involved.
And we'll talk about that. But the other thing that strikes me is you're serving multiple missions here with this training. Give us an example of some of the things that the dogs will do when they're fully trained.
Okay. So we have two programs that we place dogs through with clients. And so one is service dogs, and they assist people who have mobility impairments. And then the other...
Okay, so they're not able to move around as they would like.
Right. So the other program are medical alert dogs that work with someone who has a medical condition
like
that changes.
Like diabetes or
right.
epilepsy.
Diabetes is the most common one.
So they know when their blood sugar
right.
is...
So on the mobility assistance side of things, the bread and butter of a mobility assistance dog is retrieving things that have been dropped. Almost anyone who has a mobility impairment has difficulty picking things up.
So, for example, could you train the dog to open that or push that switch to open the door in various
malls? Yes.
Yeah.
So those
like
the large, usually they're large round or square buttons with the wheelchair on it that open a door automatically.
And the
dogs learn that. They
learn
to use their noses and their paws and their bodies in different ways.
Does that have anything to do with your name? I mean, we're talking about
a little
eyes,
bit, right?
Ears,
eyes,
nose?
Ears, nose, and paws. So it's all of the different parts of
how come
the,
I didn't figure that out? So that's what you're really training them to use all of their capabilities to help somebody.
Right, and to help problem. And to help a person with those capabilities too, you know. So what where a person may have a deficit that the dog can step in and
well,
help with.
Hold
that
thought, and we'll talk about the other part of the program after we just take this quick break. And this is Nonprofit Showcase, and we're with Maria Eikenberry of Eyes, Ear, Nose, and Paws, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Nonprofit Showcase, and this is your host, Fred Black, and of course, we're at 97.9 WCHL and Maria Eikenberry from Eyes, Ears, Nose, and Paws Incorporated is talking about how the program trains the service dogs to do various things to assist people with mobility issues. And then you said the other part of the program you're training for, could you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. So we train medical alert dogs, and that's usually the part that people who don't know a lot about it do the jaw-dropping, oh, wow, dogs can do that. So the dogs use their noses to detect changes in medical conditions for people who have conditions like diabetes or epilepsy.
I'm fascinated. How does a dog know about blood sugar?
So dogs have a phenomenal sense of smell, and it's kind of unimaginable for us. They can smell things that are, you know, a drop of something in an Olympic-sized pool. That's the fine grain, you know, nature of their ability to smell, and it's natural to them. So we're not teaching them to smell anything. They're smelling it all already.
You're just teaching them.
We're teaching them to discriminate to say, oh, that smell is important.
And what are they supposed to do? Bark or?
Well, ideally not bark, although that certainly things will progress to that point if they're not getting heard. But we train a nose bump alert. Different organizations train different alerts.
Okay,
but
so you
train
do it different ways.
You teach a trained alert. And in our case, the dog comes up and bumps someone to let them know. But they also have a series of other things that they will do naturally. And our handlers actually learn to read all of those behaviors so that they can.
Well, that's fascinating. Now, how did you get connected with the prison system? Because I think that's the fascinating part of this training.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's been an amazing partnership for us, which has really helped us to place more dogs, but it's also helped us to enact our mission in a fuller way because we want to partner people with dogs to improve lives. And now we can do that through the training as well as the end placement of the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
We originally, in 2014, started that program because we wanted to be able to train more dogs. So we had previously had community volunteers housing and training the dogs for an entire two-year period of time. And it's hard to find volunteers
who have
the time
ability,
and willingness to make a long-term
sure.
commitment like that. And so we couldn't get over about 10 dogs in training. We just kept hitting that limit
the capacity was just stalling out,
right? So for us, it was the ability to have a partnership where there's a much larger pool of people who had the time to make
that
kind of
commitment. So what did you do? Commitment. Call the prison and say, hey, I've got an idea for you?
Yeah. I mean, I guess something like that. We did. We contacted the central administration in Raleigh and made a proposal to them, and they were really receptive to it. They actually already had a training dogs in prison policy in place.
And I guess other states already do this,
Other states do this. And actually, North Carolina has a really strong program of training companion animals, companion dogs in shelters. I mean, in prisons. So they'll take rescue dogs, put them in prison for about 8 weeks to get basic obedience training and adopt them out to pet
dog
homes.
And so the prisoners volunteer to participate in this program?
They do. The prisoners make an 18-month commitment to the program. They're volunteers for us. They actually do. It's a paid job for them.
Under whatever
paid,
the system
right.
allows
they're
them to
paid
get paid
by the state,
yeah.
Very minimal wages,
of
but
course.
It's a job. And they are making an 18-month commitment. After that, they can stay as long as they want, but they have to stay at least 18 months. And the dogs live with them 24 hours a day, so the dogs are they're sleeping in the dorms with the guys. They have a crate by the bed, and they are going to everything except for they don't go currently into the dining hall, and mm-hmm. they don't go into the showers.
Okay.
So everywhere else, they're with the guys.
But they're partnered, and mm-hmm. the bonds begin to
They
to
are, and so we go in one day a week and provide training to the trainers so that they know what they're doing
what's
right.
going on.
And working really closely with the trainers. And then the rest of the week, the guys are obviously supervised within the prison, but they're in charge of setting the training plans and following through. And
how many do you have right now going through that process?
We have 12 dogs living in prison and 18 trainers.
And what do you hear from the trainers about how has it affected their point of view or their attitude? I mean, they're incarcerated, obviously.
Right.
They can't go anywhere.
Right. I mean, it's been, I think to say that it's been life-changing for them would actually be an understatement. It's been so powerful and on so many different planes.
In terms of giving purpose to their lives?
Right. I mean, it gives them something to be proud of. So we get, we have the trainers say things to us like, this program makes me feel human again.
And so I bet they have status that's different amongst their population?
You know, they do. And I think that's a double-edged sword. So when you have a dog in prison, everyone knows who you are. And sometimes in prison, you actually don't want everybody to know
right. who you are.
So it actually takes a lot of strength of will to enter the program because you are putting yourself in that position.
Sure.
But at the same time, it makes the administration notice you. So if you're doing well, that's a positive thing for you.
It might help with parole hearings.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you're doing a community service. You are, in fact, really in a very tangible way contributing to
someone's
life.
Are you doing it with women too, or is it just men?
We just have one partnership right now, and it is with a medium security men's facility in Franklin County.
Franklin County.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I know where that
we
is.
Hope this year to open another partnership. And so that may be with another men's facility, and it could be with women's facility. We haven't yet decided what prison.
And I
will
suspect you, as an organization, when you meet the trainers that are in the prison, you're not judgmental, you're not concerned about what they're in there for or
right. So
their
there's
history.
We screen out. We don't have anyone with certain crimes, so a sex abuse crime can't be a part of the program. So
that
basic screening happens. But no, I mean, what matters to us is that that these guys are committed and that they're doing the work and that they are stretching themselves, that they're
and they fall in love with the dogs, obviously.
Changing, you can't help.
Does this result in any post-incarceration employment?
So we have just last year started a work release program. So for trainers who have made it through that 18-month commitment, if they are moved to a minimum security facility, they are eligible for consideration to be members of our work release program. And so right now we have one trainer who comes out. He's at Orange Correctional Center in Hillsboro. He comes out during the day and works as a full-time employee for us.
I think that's the young man I met.
Yes. You did meet him. And he has been
really
he's amazing. I mean, he's a blessing for us to have because he has amazing training. I mean, he worked with our program for over a year and a half and is then coming in as an employee that's already trained in how we do things. He works, he goes out on field trips in the community. He trains our community volunteers. He trains our clients. So he's an amazing instructor. He's an amazing dog trainer. And
I think you said it very well, giving purpose to life. I mean,
absolutely.
That's an incredible thing when you think about all of the things going on in their lives to have purpose and know you're helping someone.
Yeah. Well, and a lot of these guys maybe haven't had the opportunity in their lives to feel like they are doing something really positive for someone else.
Well, doing something positive for someone else. We're going to take our break, and when we come back, I want to ask you how people can help. So this is Nonprofit Showcase, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to Nonprofit Showcase, and this is your host, Fred Black, and we're with Eyes, Ears, Nose, and Paws, Maria Eikenberry, and she was just describing both elements of the program. And I now want to ask you, Maria, you can't do this without funding, obviously. So how do you pay the bills? And then how can people who are listening, who might be interested in helping in whatever way, get involved?
So you're absolutely right. We couldn't do it without volunteers, and we couldn't do it without funding. We get our funding from the majority of it from individual donors. We do get some grants, and we also get some revenue from our clients. So our clients do pay a fee for the placements.
Okay.
And that helps them be invested in the placement and also to feel like they can come back and say, this isn't working the way I want it to. I need help.
So they do have a stake in it.
They absolutely have a stake. That's a relatively small portion of the funding. But and so we certainly welcome financial contributions.
And you have a website.
We have a website, which is eenp.org.
So that's
short for eyes, ears, nose, and paws.org.
Is there a donation link?
There is a donation link.
And since you're a
501c3. And there's also an address. So if somebody wants to write a check and send a check, then that's all available on the website. There's also information about volunteering for the organization on the website. So there's a huge variety of ways people can get involved. Obviously, we need community volunteers to house the dogs and train them, but we also
get them to the point so you can take them to Franklin County.
Yeah. We need people who can help us with one-time tasks, who can come out to a PR event and talk about the organization, who can help with transporting our dogs.
So there's all sorts of things.
There's a lot of different things. We have a volunteer training every 2 months, and so information about that is on the website and how to sign up. There's information about the current volunteer opportunities, so you can look and see if there's something
that interests you. What if somebody knows somebody that needs a service dog? How do they tell you that, hey, I know somebody?
So on the website is an email, but it's info@eenp.org. So you can send us an email. You can give us a call. The number is 919-408-7292.
Okay, say that one more time.
919-408-7292. 7292. Okay. So any of those ways you can get in touch with us, we're happy to get you set up with an application to become a client, with information about volunteering, information about donating, any of those if you want to contact us in any of those ways.
There was another question that struck me as I was thinking about what you were saying. Who names the dogs?
Oh, so the dogs get named in a few different ways. We do name dogs ourselves as a way to honor people who've given something to the organization.
Ah.
So for instance, graduating soon, we have a dog named Justice, who is named for our former board chair, Mary Justice.
Ah. So
we do that. We also give some of our larger donors the opportunity to name a dog.
And the name stays.
And the name stays, right? Every once in a while, we have a client who, for some reason, needs to change the name if it's hard for them to say because they have difficulty speaking.
Yeah.
So we do occasionally get a name change later.
You're a flexible organization.
We are.
Well, that's pretty interesting because I just wondered, okay, now the dog gets a name, and I know from the time I owned a dog that consistent sort of process is important.
One other thing I would just tell people is three times a year we have a public graduation that we love to have people come to. We usually have about 100, 150 people come to it. We get to hear from everyone and see the clients graduate.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for being with us today. And this is Nonprofit Showcase with your host, Fred Black. And we will see you next time.